Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome for another conversation of the Inspire Possibility Show. And as you know, I regularly schedule people that I feel inspired by, that I consider thought leaders, cutting-edge thought leaders, wisdom teachers, people that have been on this path for a while. And my hope is by joining in on this conversation, by listening, is that you'll feel inspired and feel differently about life and perhaps have a few ideas that will make your life better. And I have somebody today who I've known about for quite some time, but I've never met him until maybe 2 minutes ago when we've been talking on the phone. His name, and I don't even know if I'm going to say his name right, but it sounds like it's Edward Villejoyen. Did I do justice to that?
No, but it's really good to hear all the variations. I know it's a difficult name to look at and say correctly. In my country of origin, it's as common as Smith. So coming to the United States and suddenly overnight becoming exotic is quite a treat. It's pronounced Fil-Yun.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
I'm going to have
a hard time with that one.
So forgive me if I mess it up. I think I'm just going to call you Edward.
How about that?
I'm just going to simplify that. I'm just going to Edward.
Yeah.
And you've written a couple of books. One I'm looking at now is Ordinary Goodness. And, sometimes we feel, being a good person is we don't necessarily get rewarded. And
yes.
and just like in the news, is you hear about all these things that are, people are catastrophizing, but you don't hear about all the good things people are doing. And I know there is a website I'm familiar with called thegoodnewsnetwork.org. And
yes.
I know you mentioned
yes.
something in your book about a website or a philosophy where they reward goodness. And can you kind of speak to this idea of ordinary goodness and because I think people are struggling right now with it. Just seems that a lot of our values have been in this last election kind of challenged by somebody who's not respectful and somebody that most of us are not proud of, and it's not a role model. I mean, it's about win. I mean,
yeah.
His only role model is about winning at all costs, and there's no integrity or dignity. And so, how do young people? And I know you're, by the way, I didn't say in the introduction, but you're the senior minister of the Center for Spiritual Living in Santa Rosa. And do you still do that regularly? Are you there regularly?
Yes, I do. I am. Yes, I am. We have three services on Sunday, and it's a beautiful community up here. But you've described these turbulent times very well. And I think I didn't know I was writing this book for these times, but it seems like it's super appropriate now because people are feeling challenged. And I think there are a lot of good-hearted people that want to have some sort of sense that there really is something good in the world still, despite everything that's going on. But the problem, and you characterized it very well, is that we're overwhelmed with bad news and overwhelmed with challenges and overwhelmed with very, very serious issues that rightly we should attend to the point that the good news or the goodness in ordinary people falls into the background. And what ordinary goodness is about is taking the time to get some balance so that we turn to those places where goodness is being modeled and get our inspiration from that. Because the alternative is to surrender and give up completely to the overwhelming pressure of the urgent bad news of our time.
I years ago used to write poetry. And one line from a poem is that I said, if the visionaries of peace stop loving, then the prophets of doom will have their day of gloom.
Now, I needed that poem for my book. That's
I mean, there's actually, as I said it, I realized I forgot a line first. It goes before it is, I think I go, if there's where there's fear, there can't be love. And where there's love, there can't be fear. And should there be a day when the visionaries of peace stop loving, then the prophets of doom will have their day of gloom.
And that's right. I just think we give up.
Your turn.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I liken it to if I drop something on my toe, like let's say I'm working outside and I drop a spade or a hammer on my toe, all of my attention just goes to that pain and that toe, to the point where I've forgotten that everything else in my body is still working and functioning very well. And so if I get into the habit of turning my attention to the urgent, terrifying news on a persistent basis, I can start to lose track of the goodness in the world. And I called it ordinary because it doesn't have to be spectacular acts of kindness or spectacular sunsets or, you know, the majestic and the giant. I'm talking about the simple things that people do to each other that make a difference, connect us heart to heart, inspire us to do better, that make a difference in the world. Just being, for example, nice, common courtesy. Somebody recently said to me, I think it's a forgotten skill, and I think she was right. The practice of being courteous to each other has a remarkable effect on connecting us and lifting us up. And role models in these times, instead of turning entirely away from the role models are doing well, this is the time for us to look at those people who are doing the kind of good in the world, and they may be my next door neighbor. And then to use them as a guide for how I want to show up in the world.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing is that I know, and my sense is that how you find this is really, you have another book called The Power of Meditation. And
right.
I've been a meditator for since the 70s, and I just find that, and I'm curious what your take is on your perspective on the power of meditation. And I have a sense to kind of dovetail. Is the meditation,
you know,
with what's going on today? And can you, you know, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I saw on your website that you are very interested in mindfulness and how you train people to be more mindful of their life. And that is the heart of it for me. At anything that slows the process down, if it's noticing, walking, listening, meditating, mindfully making a cup of tea, these things don't cause us to be disconnected from life. They cause us to be connected to life. They don't cause us to be shallow or useless. They cause us to be wise and listening. So I'm an avid believer in the power of slowing down through meditation in particular and mindfulness practices. And also walking through nature as a way of slowing things down, because our world is faster than it ever has been before. Communication is light speed, and you know, from the world of social media, everything happens in short bites, to the point where it's like a car traveling really fast on a freeway. So the faster it goes, the more dangerous maneuvering becomes. So the idea of mindfulness practices is to reduce that speed, to be able to make choices that really resonate with the person's value system and heart. And out of that slowness, the ability to connect with people causes kindness and compassion to feel more natural.
Mm-hmm. So what about, you know, you mentioned the word mindfulness, and I got to say there's some words that become buzzwords, and authentic is one of them. And
yes.
I joke with people that the word bipolar is you no longer meet people that are moody, right? Nobody's moody today. They're bipolar, right?
Right.
Nobody you did. I'm bipolar. I mean, you know, back then it was like, oh, this guy's really moody, you know. In a bad mood, but today it's all, I'm bipolar, you know, or somebody who let's say doesn't concentrate, you know, has got an issue concentrating or whatever, gets distracted. Well, he's, you know, ADH or AD this or AD, you know. And a lot of and mindful, you know, is you can see this on a commercial on television for buying a car. You know, are you a mindful buyer? And I just find that word gets so overused. And what do you mean by mindfulness?
Well, you know, one of the people I enjoy reading is Donald Altman. He wrote the Mindfulness Code, and in it he talks about it being a process of paying a type of attention, a soulful attention, to the beautiful details of life. He talks about it as a way of moving through the world, and I appreciate that very much. There's a particular exercise he gives to people who are starting to explore mindfulness. He asks them, before they get engaged in the day, to take a moment and take inventory of what is around them, to notice the simple things that ordinarily go by the wayside of our attention. It's almost like a gratitude practice to take in that I'm breathing, to take in that I've got a bed, to take in that in a moment I have the ability to get up and use electricity. And he says that this practice of taking in and really appreciating all, savoring everything for what it is, it doesn't result in us ignoring the larger issues of the world. It has a different effect. It causes us to be more finely attuned to what is important to us in life.
Mm-hmm. You know, I agree with all that, and I add one thing. It's noticing. It's being aware without judging.
Because I think that's very important.
You know, I think that's how I see mindfulness is being aware, noticing. Without judging, because I think, you know, we throw in these personal editorials, right?
It's almost like a
habit. How do you? What's your strategy for, you know, this negative self-talk that we all have? What's your strategy for? How do you deal with that? What do you do?
Well, you know, negative self-talk. I'm thinking of the 12-step tradition that says you can't really address a problem unless you know you have it in the first place. Many people, the first step in addressing self-talk is to notice that you have it. And many people don't know that they have this thing called an inner critic or inner voice until they start to adopt some of these practices we've been talking about, slowing down long enough to notice that, you know, gosh, when I make a mistake, I'm pretty harsh on myself. I probably say things to myself that I wouldn't say to a kid.
Exactly.
And that's a very common response in people. So the first step is to notice it, and then the second step is to interrupt it. And that may be a practice. For each person, we have to approach it differently. Some people find it beneficial to take a breath and not talk to themselves for a moment. You know, very much like if you get an angry email and you write a lightning email response, don't press send.
Exactly.
So the interruption of the angry self-talk is the first step. And then the second thing is to start verbally, out loud, or in your mind, saying something to be the antidote to that harsh self-talk. A lot of people in the beginning, it feels like an unnatural practice.
Give me an example of what you do. Like, how do you?
Like, for example,
you interrupt
the pattern. I do something wrong. I'm saying, oh, you're an idiot. And then I just in my mind
I know that I said that.
Right.
I know.
And then
one.
I'll say something like I'm. Oh, oops, or stop for a moment. And then I will think to myself, what would I say if this was a young person, a child in my life? I ask ordinary people like that, what would you say to a child that's made a mistake? They come out with the most beautiful things. They'll say, you know, we can try again tomorrow. And as I pick up that language, I try saying it to myself. Now, look, if I've been in the habit of being really mean to myself for 36, 46, 56 years, it's not going to turn around overnight. And the first times I start saying gentle things to myself, they may even feel inauthentic, and I have to stick with it. It's like learning a new skill. You know, if you're learning to play the flute, you don't make music in the beginning. It sounds awful.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to stick with it. You have to show up for it, you know. And it's also, it's like going to the gym when you're learning to work out for the first time. If you overdo it in the beginning, you can hurt yourself. So mindfulness in the form of a care-filled, slow practice is very important. You did say something else very beautiful about mindfulness, not putting our own meaning onto anything. Don't we have a habit of that? Just adding meaning on things when none is necessary?
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I do, what I add to this is, you know, when I hear that negative voice, what I've added is I give it a name. So I recognize it as part of the recognition. Right, because you're saying first thing you got to recognize it, and it could be a tension in your body, but we do this all the time. Oh, why did I say that? I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
You know, or I shouldn't have done this, or I shouldn't have done that, or why didn't I say hello? We all have our own version, and I kind of think like we sometimes, but that it's very subtle. That version is, you know, sometimes have the disguise. But so the first step is to recognize it. And then I give it a name. So I call mine Ralph. So when I get that thing going on and I recognize it and I go, Ralph, okay, I hear you. But I don't try to reason with them. I don't try to reason with the gremlin. You know, in coaching we call it the gremlin. I call it, in my work, your VOJ, your voice of judgment. And so I don't try to reason with it. What I just notice it, because by noticing what it does, it detaches me from the actual experience. You know, because you're getting from your emotion. I think your negative response is an emotional response. When you detach from it and you go, "Hey, Ralph, you're killing me," that's more intellectual. And I think you break, because it's almost like self hypnosis in a way. You hypnotize yourself. You know.
Yeah, and those voices, when they're in their negative fearful mode, they can be as compelling as negative fearful news lines, and if there's an urgency about them that you know we feel like we have to pay attention. And I think your process of noticing and naming them is a beautiful way to interrupt and change that inner program.
So, what about your books? How do people get a hold of you? And your books and the programs you give, and why don't you let our listeners like at this point in the conversation to kind of give you a chance to I didn't want to say your name.
Okay. My email is my email is really easy. It's Edward at and the letters CSL, that stands for Center for Spiritual Living, SR SantaRosa.org. I'll say that again, Edward@CSLSR.org. And the book, Ordinary Goodness, if you just search for Ordinary Goodness and my first name, Edward, it'll come right up. It's available on Amazon. It's available at Barnes & Noble. And we've also got a great little spiritual bookstore up here in Santa Rosa. It's called Stepping Stones Books and Gifts. And it has a website, steppingstonesbooksandgifts.org. And the good deal with our bookstore is we'll send you the book without charging you for the delivery.
Wow. Yeah, because sometimes that can be, you know, it adds up.
It should add.
It's very, very generous. And I don't think ordinary either. It's generous. It's beyond ordinary goodness.
Oh, thank you.
But you know this thing. I'm looking again on just on your cover. Ordinary goodness, the surprisingly effortless path, creating a life of meaning and beauty. You know, I find that for so many people, including myself, this struggle sometimes to find meaning and purpose is something that I think, you know, we wonder about for sometimes most of our lives. And what I experience is when you sometimes you find what gives you meaning, and sometimes, you know, over a period of time, that no longer serves you. It no longer fulfills you, and you feel that maybe you have another path to pursue or another thing to discover. And
yeah.
It's certainly so what, you know, you've been on this path with the Center for Spiritual Living, which I shared with you, I'm very familiar with.
Yes.
And it's really looking for deeper meaning. What was, and I always say that this idea that we've all heard, you know, we teach what we want to learn.
Yeah.
And so I always take the assumption if somebody writes a book about a topic, that I'm always curious about what's going on with them that kind of got them to kind of go in this direction. And so what about you? Like, what got you to write a book about ordinary goodness?
You know,
I
grew up living very close to my grandmother, and she's mentioned in my book. She's my hero and role model for ordinary goodness. But I didn't know at the time that she was being a role model. But she was quiet, and she was persistent in her kindness. She was always available to listen. And she was this harbor of peace and a sanctuary of compassion. Anybody could come to her. And the reason why it was so effective in my life was because I grew up with a special needs brother who, in a way, I didn't have a full childhood because so much of our time and attention was spent on making sure he didn't fall, making sure he was well, making sure his medication was in place. And he was expected to not live very long, but he did. He lived very long into his 30s. And so, you know, there was this sense, this added pressure in our lives for having to, we were stretched thin sometimes. And
wow.
My grandmother, now that I look back at it, she was there like a constant light. And in moments of frustration, in moments of fatigue, we went to her, we could complain, we could say whatever we wanted, and she would have no judgment. And she would listen, and one of her responses would be to make a cup of tea, you know, whether we wanted it or not. She would make tea,
right.
and that meant the session was started, and we could just tell her everything, and we would never get put in our place or judged or fixed. We were witnessed. And so looking back in life, now that my brother's gone and my grandmother's gone, I realized everything that I learned about goodness in the form of kindness and compassion and service to others, I got from being with my brother and from the model that my grandmother gave to me. And that's really what this book is. It's a tribute to the way she shaped my life. As a result of it, I realized that we're shaping people's lives. We may not be aware of it. They're watching us and learning from us,
right,
and being impacted by the little things we do.
Mhm. Mhm. Wow. What a. So how was it? I mean, your grandmother, would you be in the kitchen and she say, "How about a cup of tea?"
Yeah. You know, she had a passion for novels, romance novels, and she'd be sitting reading them, looking down, and I think she was trying to block us out at first, you know, but if we would pour in and be with a moment of frustration, she'd be sitting in her kitchen. She was in the house next door, so we could go right around there. And we'd just start talking.
And where
was
this?
This was in Johannesburg, South Africa, where I grew up.
Uh-huh.
Far away. And she would just fold down her book and her apron and start to listen. And if it was a particularly serious matter, she would say, I think it's time for a cup of tea. And she would make that tea. And there was something about the ritual of making the tea that made it really warm and comfortable.
Right. So what I'm curious about is, do you have today, like in your own life, and I know you told me you live up in the Santa Rosa area, do you have like a ritual that you do every day that kind of centers you and calms you down?
Oh, I certainly do. And you know, I'm really fortunate. It's not only in my personal day. I work like at the Center for Spiritual Living, where I have built into my scheduled time for meditation. I mean, how lucky is that? Our staff pauses at 3 o'clock And we sit in a circle and we do different exercises. Sometimes it's meditation, sometimes it's prayer. And I wish that for everybody to have an opportunity to pause throughout the day. Personally, I don't really understand how the population can survive without some kind of practice that lets us reflect. And I have that in my own life. First thing in the morning when I wake up, before I get out of bed, I begin with gratitude practices, and I begin with thinking about my day and asking myself the question, how would I like to travel through this day? What would I like to be communicated through the way I travel through this day? When I first started practice, I had to get out of bed because I would fall asleep. But I'm so used to practicing it now, I can do it. As soon as my consciousness returns from sleeping, I can begin the practice, and it makes all the difference for the day.
Sure does. You know, I have a little, how I want my day to go. What I do, I meditate. I do get out of bed, though. I go, you know what? I mean, I don't want to stay in bed because I'm just lying there, and I shower, and then I have a separate space where I meditate. And then I have a time. I use a timer, and then I focus on, like you, a gratitude practice, and then I focus on how I want my day to be. But I ask myself a question, and that is, I always say to myself, I'm curious about what the highlight of my day might be. And I always I'm always
wonderful.
In that question, and the idea is you don't know. I mean, you might have a few things. That you wherever you have to do, but I'm in that question. So usually at the end of the day, or not usually, but what a great choice is. You know, I'm not sure what the highlight was. There were just two or three things that were just great, and they're all great. I don't know, and it just it creates this expect because I know a lot. Ernest Holm talks a lot about. Good and the power of good.
Yeah.
And I think what this does, it really creates this expectation of good, is what
it tunes us into
like
noticing it.
It does. It does. Yeah. So I do that almost every day since I kind of, stopped being a lawyer. In 2000, I made my switch to get into doing what I do now. And I always meditate. I've been a meditator since the 70s. But I was into gratitude, but having the highlight of the day, it makes you curious.
See, that's one of those things that are so it's so simple that you can ignore it or underestimate it. And that's the ordinary part. The ordinary practices, like that question you ask yourself, it's so accessible and it's so easy to do. You don't need special skills. Just need to do it.
And, at first asking yourself that question, it might, at first I felt a little awkward. Our one thing I do is when I go to out in the world and I go to the health food store or whatever, I always try to, when people have name tags, I always like to, hey, Ed, how's it going?
Yeah.
And call them by their name. And sometimes, it feels a little rushed, but I do it anyway because what it does is, and this is a good way to kind of sum up our conversation because we're running out of time, but what I find is it takes a mundane, ordinary experience of going to the cleaner or the health food store or getting gas, and it makes it this ordinary experience extraordinary.
Well, exactly like walking around the lake up here. I walk around the lake and I make it my task as people walk in my direction to say hello and smile and nod. And some people are delighted and other people are surprised, but I let them have their experience.
Right.
I just find that for me it becomes more valuable to do it than to not do it.
Ed, we're going to have to sign off here. So
okay.
I want to. This went by really fast. And,
it sure did.
and I want to thank you for being the guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. And I hope
thank
that
you.
We can further this conversation, and I think it's great what you're doing and the community you created up in Santa Rosa, and I've heard so many great things about it. So I want to thank you for being on the Inspire Possibility Show, and until to everybody, to me, to you, to all the listeners, journey on.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it very much.
All right. Thank you.